If you're haunted and harassed by your own inner critic, if you've ever been curious about why hypnosis works so well, if you're a seasoned hypnotist, or if you suspect that the inner critic is actually hypnotizing you to hold back from reaching the greatness that you know deep down is inside you, lean in and get inspired to get out of your comfort zone and create your one precious life with purpose and intention. If you like this show, you'll love my powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room, because it gives you crystal clear guidance and direction and illuminates an ingenious way to make triumphant decisions, no matter how stuck you feel or how confused you were. This powerful hypnosis audio is my gift to you when you go to theimpostermonster.com. Again, that's theimpostermonster.com. Don't forget the. Theimpostermonster.com. And yes, I'm done saying it. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening. I'm Lori Hammond, and I'm truly grateful for you. Chris Jones and I just ended our conversation. And at the end of the conversation, we were interrupted by his baby waking up. And I wanted to leave it in because I thought it was such a precious interaction. So just be aware, if you watch this over video, you'll get to see his beautiful little girl, Sage. And if not, you'll hear some baby noises at the end. But I believe that listening to his final words is well worth the wait. I hope you enjoy this podcast interview with Chris Jones. Welcome, everyone. I am so excited for today's guest. I have Chris Jones here with me, and he actually reached out to me. Well, he followed me on Instagram, and I said, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're following me. Thank you. And so we connected, and now we're having this conversation. And he and I decided to just jump in. We know very little about one another at this point. And so I thought it would be really cool to allow you to eavesdrop on our conversation and get to know Chris along with me. Chris, I'm so grateful you're here. My introduction to you was watching you hypnotize Howie Mandel. And yeah. I just watched in awe and thought, this guy is so cool. So thank you for being here and tell us a little about yourself.
Oh, thanks for that. Yeah, I shook hands with Howie Mandel. He's a germaphobe, deal or no deal, he only fist pump. And that, I think that was 2015, 2016. So I was like 29 years old. And it was pretty cool. I didn't know what was gonna come from it. I got some notoriety, I got some fame. I got a lot of people reaching out to me on the hypnosis level and like the could be client level. And I just wanted to chit chat with you because yeah, you came up with my Instagram. I said, this person looks like a good human being. Like when you can tell someone's a good person. And I watched a few of your interviews and you talk to people who I respect and admire. And here we are today.
I love that. Thank you so much. So that's one of the things I was curious about coming into this conversation is I know there's kind of like little circles of different pockets of hypnotists. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Freddie Jacquin and Melissa Tears and Mike Mandel. Will you talk to me maybe a little bit about your training and the hypnotists that you follow?
Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of people go like, I was a magician turned hypnotist, or like one of my mentors was a DJ turned hypnotist. But I was in college and I was loving magic, doing magic, and I bombed a lot on stage, like talent show after talent show, just bombed. And because I couldn't figure out my thing, like I was a people person, but how do you turn that into a magic trick? And then I think it was graduate school, I saw a hypnotist. I met him before the show. Yeah, it was graduate school. And I was studying recreation, outdoor parks, and because I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And the hypnotist was this guy right here, Dr. Steve Tallman, all right? And I talked to him about magic before the show, and he's doing his routine. And he goes, sleep to someone. And he goes, Chris, my friend Chris is in the audience. He likes magic. Watch this, Chris. Give me your wallet when you wake up. Guy gave him his wallet. Forget you gave me the wallet. Sit back down. Looked into his pocket. He was like, where's your wallet? Give me your cell phone. Forget. And he gave me the cell phone. And he's like, Chris, you can't do that with magic. And I literally felt my heart like divorce magic and fall in love with hypnosis. And I said, okay, this is what I want to do. So the next full year, I just studied every book that I could. I wrote my thesis on hypnosis. Again, I went to grad school with recreation. That was my degree, outdoor parks, playing. And so they were very liberal. And they said, yeah, write your thesis on whatever you want. And I finished a 67-page book on hypnosis, audience enjoyment of hypnosis shows. And that was my question I wanted to answer.
And you wrote a 67-page thesis on that.
Yeah.
Do you, is that something that I could link to in, for my audience?
I think so. Having said that, there will be typos. And I tried to transcribe it like last year. And so I'm like reading it and I source things well, and then I source things horribly. Like, I definitely have insert source here in the parentheses. And then I just turned that in and I graduated with shit like that. Like, it should have been a C-plus paper, but I still graduated somehow.
I love that. And I have noticed that tends to be a principle underneath people who are high achievers, is that they're willing to do things imperfectly and willing to maybe start before they're ready.
I think if we started when we're ready, we would never start anything. Like if you're confident you're not gonna fail, where is the challenge? So I've done some risky things on stage. People are like, oh, you're so gutsy. You're so, you know, lack of a better term, ballsy. And I'm like, well, first off, there should be a term for ovaries. Like if you have balls or ovaries, like, man, that took a lot of ovaries. We need to dive into that because I haven't talked to many female hypnotists. You're the first on the record, but I've reached out to a few and I'm like, I want to pick your brain. But I tried to hypnotize Teller from Penn & Teller, like on Fool Us to talk. And I did my same induction and, all right, now say something. He's like, and I tried it again. And it's, do you want to say anything? He's like, and Penn was very kind. He's like, we don't know what that was. You entertained the audience. You were very funny. They liked you. And we thought we were going to destroy hypnosis on our show, BS. But we interviewed hypnotists. Turns out there's a lot of validity to it. So yeah, hypnosis does appear to be real. You didn't hypnotize Teller. He could have been like, F you. He could have spoken, but you didn't fool us. You were very entertaining and I hope that's okay. And I'm like, that was great. And I ran off stage. I was like, I will take that. So
I love that. I feel like you just gave people listening such a huge way to reframe this idea of trial and error, of failure and success. You mentioned earlier that when you first started the magic shows that you bombed on stage all the time. And I, when I watched you with Howie Mandel, I thought, like, is this guy nervous? What if that didn't work? How did he find the courage? So will you talk to me a little bit more about where you find the courage to put yourself out there and maybe tell me, well, we'll stop there. Then I'll go to the next question.
I don't know if it's courage, but I have an idea in my head. And sometimes I won't be able to sleep until I put it on paper and, you know, restless energy. So yeah, I got on America's Got Talent because people kept recording my live shows. And, you know, a lot of people get their success on YouTube, but college people, that was my predominant audience. They were filming my shows, they put on YouTube, and my videos have like 3,000 views. I did a full show from some kids recording with his cell phone and it got 3 million views. And I'm like, how are you doing that? Like, I'm not upset, but like, it's not that interesting. Like I edit it and like, I'm like, oh, look, here's some music, here's some back. And they get, you know, a million views on, I was like, well, bless your heart. So America's Got Talent saw me. They said, we want a hypnotist and you have to tell them what you're gonna do ahead of time. So if you make it 4 rounds, or if you don't, you have to tell them what you plan to do for each round. And so I pitched them Howie's gonna shake my hand, Howard Stern, who's talk show, he's gonna forget how to talk, Heidi Klum will fall in love with someone, and Mel B, I don't know what I was gonna do with Mel B. But I said, just focus on the Mandel thing. And I was like, cool. So yes, I was nervous. You can hear my voice crack before I say, you will shake my hands, I'm wearing gloves, and he did. I was like, yes. And then he sat down and they were like, that was pretty cool. Could you like erase it? And I was like, all right, now we're jazz music. You guys like me, I like you. And so I was very comfortable after that, so.
Oh, I love that. That is so cool. When you think about maybe the very first time you got on stage to do a magic show, talk to me about that.
So bad. I mean, I loved magic. I was in pre-K and I went to pre-K twice because I was walking around and my mom was like, he's a handful, I can't take him. So a magician came to our pre-kindergarten and I saw his tricks and I felt like they were kind of obvious. And the second year he did the exact same things. And I was like, guys, like, and I learned that if you just observe something or watch it twice, you'll figure it out. So since kindergarten, I was reading magic books and I loved it, but I wouldn't practice. I just kept accumulating knowledge. And so I would try and do cups and balls, but I wouldn't practice. So I'm like, here's a ball, here's a cup. Where's the ball? I don't know. I didn't practice. Thank you. Good night. I went in front of my college audience and I was making a person's driver's license levitate in my hands. And like the first row was like, ooh, cool. And the back row was like, we can't see. So I went on stage and I'm still making it levitate. She's like, yeah, this is so cool. I didn't know what the spotlight, they could see the string going from my ear into the, and then everyone just like was, I'm still like, But like everyone was my friend on college campus. So they wouldn't tell me that it was stupid. To like days later at the bars, they're like, Chris, everybody saw the string. Like, that's the reason everyone saw the string and I did. So I've been horrible on stage to a painful degree and you just have to get better.
So the reason I'm not gonna ask this next question is because I talk to so many people who want to make a bigger difference in the world. They wanna start using hypnosis, whether it's in the context of stage shows or therapeutically. But they're so afraid of screwing up. And I can imagine just hearing that story, someone's heart sinking. And I think one of the best ways to overcome that is to model someone who's doing it well. So if you would just help me get a little bit more in your head, you said, you know, just how are you able to get back on stage again after realizing that everyone there basically saw you as a fraud?
Well, I can relate because I didn't want to do therapeutic hypnosis because my fear was I'd help someone quit smoking cigarettes. And honest to God, I was afraid they would pick up crack. Like, I was like, all right, you won't drink alcohol anymore. And then they start doing heroin. Like, that was my legitimate fear. Like, it's okay to be afraid, but talk to people about your fears because everything in life, there's a roadblock. And so even with your fears, like, oh, I'm scared I'm gonna be driving, I'm gonna hit someone. Like, I didn't get a driver's license until I was 21 because I was afraid I was gonna kill someone with a car. And my dad's like, yeah, when time comes, you'll wanna drive. And I'm like, I have a bicycle, I'll never wanna drive. And he's like, son, you're not gonna drive your car on the sidewalk. So don't worry about pedestrians. And anyone who's coming at you can also pull away. So your fears are fine, but it's not like you're an unstoppable force. Like, you're gonna make mistakes. It's totally okay. The end. Like, oh my God, what if my business doesn't work? Then take out another loan. Like, oh my God, if I don't make money, what happens? It's a tax deduction. Write it off on your taxes. You're gonna be fine. You know, as long as, you know, you take the chance, you'll work out.
I love that. When I quit my job as a hairstylist to become a hypnotist, I sat down and journaled and I used some of the questions that Tim Ferriss talks about in his fear setting. And It was basically, okay, if I do this and I fail, what's the worst that can happen? And it's that I go back to being a hairstylist, which was a career I absolutely loved. And it's like, okay, why wouldn't I give it a try? And I think I recently heard someone say, you know, we are the center of our own universe and it feels like the world revolves around us. And if we screw up, it's just going to be like this terrible thing. So I hear you almost saying like, lighten up, it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very optimistic, but if it doesn't work out, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, and I didn't do anything amazing with these college shows, but because people kept filming them and I was open to, I didn't go, hey, I don't want people stealing my routines. Don't film this. I was just like, if this makes you happy, cool. And because of them filming me, I got to do other cool stuff.
That's another little nugget too, because so many people are afraid of putting themselves out there and doing what I call delivering value up front. So I'll make videos where I'll teach someone what they need to get rid of anxiety. And I know if they really do it, they're never going to need to come to me. But we're so afraid of delivering value up front. And for you saying, you know what, if you're enjoying this, film it. It boosted you and it helped. I think there's something magical about stepping out of that scarcity mindset, don't you?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I want to talk a little about the people that become hypnotists. Do you, so what I know about you, I knew that you did hair and you loved it. You became a hypnotist. And it sounds like, are we still afraid to do some stage stuff?
You know, I'm less afraid just because of everything I've had to learn about getting out of my comfort zone, but it does seem way scarier to me than helping someone stop drinking or stop smoking. The idea of getting up on stage and potentially making a fool of myself is really scary.
Okay. I don't think you will make a fool of yourself, period, because through seeing just your social media presence, I knew you are a person who likes to make other people look good. It might be why you like doing people's hair. Like, that's the person we haven't met that I can tell that you are. You want other people to look good and feel good. And if you're on stage as a hypnotist trying to make people look good, you can't look bad.
Thank you for that. That is like, that just gave me the coolest aha moment. And I totally agree with you. That is my mission in life, is to lift other people up. And I've realized that in order to do that, I have to do scary things. So you make me want to go do stage shows now.
You have to. I mean, what's a stage show? It's you have a microphone, which is a very empowering thing. Oh, you have a microphone right now. You're halfway there. You have the microphone. People are listening to you. You're smiling. You're like a lion on stage. You're just prowling back and forth. It's pretty damn cool.
That sounds awesome. What do you love most about stage shows?
I like making people smile and laugh. Mm-hmm. I've been doing shows during COVID, and the audience is like 10 people on stage and maybe 3 or 4 in the audience. They record the rest. They Zoom broadcast the rest. But we're still wearing masks, so like you don't get to see the smile. Like if you look closely, you see the eye wrinkle, which is fine, but I like making people laugh and smile. I'll do some shows virtually and then you can see their faces, but a lot of the cameras are muted. And I'm like, guys, I can't be with you. Unmute your camera, unmute your microphone. Let's see each other. So I'm looking forward to when it gets warm again, because I've done some shows in Michigan. And the rule is kind of just spread out. Like if you spread out, you don't wear a mask, you're outdoors, which may not be the safest thing, but I've been fortunate. I've gotten COVID tests like 4 or 5 times, and I've been very fortunate, blessed not to get it so far.
That's awesome. So you're in Michigan?
I'm in Chicago, but I've done the 50 states now. My agents tell me where to go. Fun fact, listeners, if you're doing like college shows, most college representatives will take 20% of your amount. That's typical. Like, it seems like a lot, but 19-20%. And when you do corporate, if you have a corporate agent, you might be looking at 30%, but they get paid a lot more. So it's no big deal.
I love that you're still doing stuff. And will you talk to me a little bit about how your shows work virtually? How do you do those?
Yeah. So I get an email from the agents. They're like, this school wants you on this date. Cool. And ideally, I send them a Zoom link immediately so they can start sharing that on social media. I'm really bad at doing emails. So usually it's like 2 weeks ahead of time, but I'll make them a video like, hey, it's Chris Jones. I'm coming to your camp to see if you can stay awake, stay woke. And, 30 minutes before showtime, I have a link up. I'm playing music in my basement. I got some lights. I've got a bookshelf behind me of all the books because I'm a book nerd forever. And then people come on, hopefully. Like, orientations are huge because it's like welcome week. And so August, September, I've had 100 people remotely. And now, finals are approaching. Spring break is approaching. They're going to get distracted. You might have 20, 30, 40. Mm-hmm. The other kicker is, what happens if someone gets hypnotized and they lose Wi-Fi or their cell phone computer dies? So that was a big fear. So the first real obstacle with COVID, they're like, Chris, can you do hypnosis shows? And I'm like, I don't feel comfortable with it, because if someone gets hypnotized and they don't snap out of it, or they have an ab reaction, what do I do? But then eventually the money ran out. And so I was like, guys, let me get a college show. So they're like, what about your fear? I'm like, forget my fear, college show. But fortunately, the numbers were small enough. And if you have a big group of people, you just say, hey, you have, in my mind, two options. Do a breakout room, do your induction, bring them back. And while they're in the breakout room, like, have a pre-show video going. Or if you want to get hypnotized 20 minutes before the show starts, check me out. I will meet you. You do your induction there for those people. You wake up some people, and then you start the show.
That's so awesome. One of the things I do, you can tell me if you think this might work in your context. When I'm getting just in a one-on-one session, or I do group hypnosis sessions every week as well, I let them know, if we lose our connection, you'll be able to come right back to the room and feel wide awake and alert. If anything happens in your surroundings you need to pay attention to, you can.
Yeah.
And to me, that's almost like that little hypnosis script in there, that it's like that post-hypnotic suggestion in case that happens.
It's a very, very good idea. Yeah. I believe I have that in there somewhere. I don't really know.
I bet you do.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, this is so cool. Okay. You said another thing a minute ago that I really latched onto on my audience's behalf, which was that you, for a while, you were just gathering knowledge and accumulating knowledge, but you weren't practicing. And I know you love books. I love books. And if I could, I would just sit in my room and read all day. I would live in a library. But I realized that the money's going to run out doing that.
Yeah.
So talk to me about, what was the catalyst that helped you start practicing, and how do you balance that now, the learning and the doing?
I considered two first hypnosis shows, the first one I got paid for and the first one I performed. And the paid for one was $100. And I don't want people to think that, well, everyone has bias, but the first one was at a gay club in Carbondale, Illinois. And that was because I was so afraid I was going to bomb. It was the party/club I knew most of my friends wouldn't be at. And so I got $100. I didn't do great. That's a whole nother story. So I'll drop some gems. The first gem is, my buddy Chad was in the audience for the first show. And when I say audience, he was like in the control room watching everything. I come on stage, I have all this confidence, and I'm like, I'm the hypnotist. And someone's talking like, hey, it's my time. Now we're gonna get to the hypnosis show. And I take some volunteers, and I knew half of them because I promoted it. And I was like, go to sleep. And out of the, I don't know, 10 volunteers, maybe one was truly hypnotized. And I was like, all right, we're gonna take a break. Everyone get a drink and we'll be right back. And then my boy Chad comes to me, he's like, Chris, excuse me, you're acting like you have a stick up your ass. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're really bossing. I don't know who this person is. And I was like, oh man, thanks. So lights come on again. I come on stage, I go, hi, I don't know who that person was. That wasn't me. I'm the guy who gives out free t-shirts. You've been spotting the whole time. Here's a free t-shirt. I need some volunteers. We're gonna try this again. And it went so much better.
You're making it look good.
Every penny of that $100 I've earned. But have a Chad friend, the friend who isn't afraid to say, hey, you're being a poop right now. I don't know who this person is. Also the friend who's like, you know, we saw the string. Like, have that person in your audience. And if it's your significant other, be okay to let them be a Chad in that moment. Because we want to come off stage and someone say, you were so good. That was amazing. Probably your best show ever. But you need to have someone say, listen, in the future, do this. The end.
This is so valuable. So it's not even just having the Chad friend. It's being willing to accept feedback. And that's been one of the huge lessons for me, as like, I love validation. I love that positive feedback. And I get so defensive when people tell me what I can fix. And so one of the biggest lessons I've learned is how to value that feedback and say, thank you. I will take that and do better next time.
It's hard, especially because you go from this imposter syndrome, as you talk about a great deal, to I am the hypnotist, I am the performer, I'm the artist. And once you get artist, you're practically Prince. Like, no one can tell me anything. I'm rocking purple every day. Yes, this is a pencil thin mustache. What? If you don't like it, you're a hater. So.
I love that. When you're at that artist status, do you have any tricks or tips for helping people still maintain that balanced humility that makes them receptive to feedback?
You know, everyone has their own style. Like, I'll tell a secret about Jim Wan, the hypnotist. He's pretty great. He's taken me under his wing. He says every year he invites his demographic of audience members into a house. He orders some pizza and he says, what are you guys doing? Just to get the pulse. It's like, who's the popular artist? So he updates his music. What's the new social media? And that keeps him relevant. So you can do it that way. Otherwise, I've done a show, and after the show, I invite people to have a drink with me. So you go to Buffalo Wild Wings, and after two drinks, I go, okay, what can I do to get better? And usually it's pretty hurtful. They say, Chris, you talk too much at the beginning of your show. I think it's pretty obvious that most new hypnotists, we talk a lot at the beginning before we hypnotize anyone because we're afraid if it doesn't work. So we are like, I got to do jokes. I'm funny. I've worked on these routines, these bits, I'm funny. I'm going to do 30 minutes of comedy and then 45 minutes of hypnosis. And that shit just drags on. So I can't say everyone's guilty of it, but I know I'm guilty. Say you're going to do it once, hypnotize someone. And then if you want to explain more, do it while they're hypnotized.
That's like, such a gem. I feel like that could apply to people who are doing this therapeutically one-on-one as well, because I think of like one of my first sessions I did with someone, I'm like, oh yeah, I can help. And inside I'm thinking, there's no way I can help this guy. And so I talked to him for like an hour and 15 minutes. And then I did this 3-minute protocol and it worked. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like 2 years later, I hear that he's completely eradicated that problem. And it was like me trying to talk myself into believing in myself.
Yeah. So the first show I did ever before the even crappy $100 show, I was learning hypnosis. And a friend of mine knew that I was practicing. And I'd always like do stuff in like the dining hall in the cafeteria. But he said, hey, would you mind doing a show for my residents in the residence halls in the dorms? And I was like, yeah, sure. And then I looked and he had flyers up. I was like, dude, I'm not ready yet. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. I told my residents they're coming. The flyers are up. And it wasn't like, I'm terribly sorry. Oh, no. It was like, well, what are you going to do? The flyers are up. We reserved the space. What are you going to do? And so I did it. And I was like, sleep. And when you wake up, you're Spider-Man. And they're like hopping around being Spider-Man. Like, oh, it worked. Oh, my God. Ah. And I was having fun. It will happen to a lot of people. The first time you hypnotize someone in front of a big audience, you're and you're like, I don't know what to do now, but that's okay. Because if you're having fun, other people are having fun. Like in comedy, if you write a script and it's funny and you're in a funny situation, you don't need to be funny on funny. If something's happening to you and it's funny, just let it be funny.
Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. I love that idea of just making it fun. My word of the year, I like wrote this on a piece of paper and put it in my sock drawer, was play, because I have such a tendency to take myself and my life so seriously that I'm just, it's like what Chad was saying to you, like there's a stick up my butt instead of just like letting it flow. So that shift of just leaning in and making someone else look good, which is what you did when he said that, and you just started talking nice to them and building that rapport. That I feel like that's all it really takes once you're ready, or before you're ready.
Yeah, having those friends, the one who's like, I'm sorry, the flyers are out, what are you gonna do? Yeah. And the friend who's like, all right, you did your show and you're bombing because you're not being yourself. So yeah. Be yourself. You talked about the sock drawer. Sounds like you have a life hack of knowing where you're going to be, giving yourself an affirmative statement. What else do you do as a life hack, if I can call it that?
Let's see. That's such as I feel like I'm on the spot. Well, I'll come up with something awesome.
No pressure.
Yeah. Well, so my last interview that I did before you was with a man who is coaching me through the Clifton Strengths Test. And one of my strengths is futuristic. And that is that I have the ability to look at the future. And it's almost like what you're saying, hearing you word it that way. It's like, I'm willing to look at what could be and give myself some perspective as like this future self. It's not always going to suck. It's not always going to be this hard. You're moving towards something positive. And I think that we can easily, what if the negative things, we can think, what if I bomb on stage? What if I do this? What if this protocol doesn't work? But we can just as easily say, what if this is amazing? What if I get a standing ovation? What if I book 10 gigs off of this? And when we start to just look at it in a more empowered perspective, it changes everything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. You're still on it. Give us our house, some life hacks that you do besides the doctoral, or explain more for the spots.
Well, so one of my favorite things is a lot of times people will come to a hypnotist and they feel really broken. Maybe they drink too much. I help a lot of people with weight issues and they feel so stuck and so broken. And they think that they need this massive epiphany, this huge aha moment to break free. Mm. And one of my favorite life hacks I learned from Dr. BJ Fogg, who is a behavioral scientist at Stanford. And he talks about tiny habits. And it's basically like narrowing in the neural pathway that's creating the problem and finding one teeny tiny way to affect change on that level. So one that I use often in my weight loss program, I know that they're going to have to get out of their comfort zone and get out of a pattern of overeating and using food to soothe themselves or using food to change their emotions. And I know it's going to be uncomfortable. So I have them brush their teeth with their opposite hand and feel the discomfort of their arm moving in weird ways and like toothpaste slobbering down their face, and just tell themselves uncomfortable things can become automatic. And then it maps across to that part of them when they're like really wanting to reach for the cheesecake, they remember that I can take the discomfort of not eating the cheesecake, because as I do this with repetition, I'm rewiring neural pathways in the brain. And I use the same thing for like to help people create an exercise habit. We think, okay, I want to go to the gym every day. I'm going to go to the gym an hour a day. I'm going to start this big hairy thing. Whereas like BJ Fogg taught that he made a habit that said, after I flush the toilet, I will do one push-up. And he just, every time he flushes a toilet, and I have a man in my weight loss program, I think he's in his 60s, and he's now doing dozens of push-ups every day because he just incorporated that one tiny habit into his life.
That's cool. I go, what happens when you go to a public bathroom? But yes, I understand.
I think that too.
Oz Perlman, who's a really fan, he was on America's Got Talent. He's a fantastic mentalist. He has a pull-up bar in his doorway. And he's like, yeah, every time I cross through that threshold, I have to do a pull-up. That's just all it is. And so you're like, when am I going to cross the threshold? Well, when I want to go to the kitchen, when I want to go to the refrigerator. So now I have to do this pull-up. And I'm like, well, I just burned one calorie. Do I want to replace it with butter?
Yes, and that would change your state as well. Just doing that physical motion would help get you out of that want to go eat junk and into a more empowered place.
Just an idea.
What is his name?
Oz, O-Z Perlman, or okay. Oz Perlman, if I think you're pronouncing it the other way. He's fantastic. Like when I met him, it was, because I loved magic, as I said. And like when I was in college, I was watching videos that he was selling. He went to the University of Michigan and he was selling DVDs of magic while a college student. So like he understands the money aspect, the performing aspect. He's a family guy. And you know, I met him in Washington, D.C. and I knew he was a big time runner. And I used to be a pretty good runner. And I was like, can we go for a run? He's like, yeah. And like, I didn't have my running shoes, but I went to Walmart and I bought some crappy shoes and I was out of shape and I didn't care what the weather was and they were shit shoes because there was no place open. But I ran with them and I kept up with them for like the full hour and a half. We put in 10 or 11 miles. And he has all these life hacks. If you can find someone who inspires you, they want to hang out with people because I think it's very lonely at the top. One thing he did, when he's like, I'm going to run for 90 minutes and there was no stopping. So you hit a red light, you hit traffic and you just turned. There was no rhyme or reason to the way we went. He's like, we're going to start here. We're going to finish here. But he wouldn't let us stop. He's like, no, the workout is 90 minutes of running. And he freaking made me keep running stupid zigzags. But if you only have 24 hours a day, you can't stop at a red light. Unless you're driving.
Wow. There's so much in there.
How
much of, at what point in your journey did this take place? And how much of your forward momentum came from that influence and having someone to model and maybe even mentor you a little bit?
I'm still looking for mentors. I am. Like Salish, who's a fantastic friend and hypnotist. when I went in, I went all in. I was done with grad school. I had already wrote my thesis and I had worked at university for 6 months. And Salish, the hypnotist, who I admired so much, I never saw him live, but he was performing in Wisconsin where I did my undergrad. And so I went, because I didn't want to rent a car. I went to a car dealership and I said, I need a car tomorrow. Sell me a car. And so they took me for every penny I was worth, but I bought a Prius, brand new, 17 miles on it. And I drove 600 miles from Southern Illinois to Wisconsin to watch him. And he's just there eating pizza. And I go, oh, you're the hypnotist. Like, I couldn't imagine the hypnotist would be eating pizza. Like, he's like, yeah. And I was like, I drove all the way to meet you. I bought a car just for this. And I want to be a hypnotist. And he's like, cool, come with me. And he took me to his car. He's like, here's a DVD of a full show. Here's my CD for my hypnosis to quit smoking. Here's this. Take anything you want from the show, borrow it. I hope it makes you really good. And then afterwards we went and got Jimmy John's, and that was 11 years ago. And since then I've been through 4 Priuses. Each one's gotten 200,000 miles, like a ton of driving. But I've just been fortunate that people will pull me under the wing. And yes, I've had hypnotists give me the stiff arm, but you know, it's okay to be threatened. I'm sure I've stiff armed some people too, but it's kinder to be kind.
This is so awesome. And I feel like just doing this interview, you're giving so many people that same gift. I was in a clubhouse room before you and I started this call, and this woman said, I have this huge audience. I'm a vegan and I help other people be vegan, but I'm not sure how to use this audience. And this guy comes on and basically gives her like a complete business plan that if she were to implement everything he said, she would be a millionaire. And I even messaged him and I'm like, oh my gosh, you gave her so much value. I hope she realizes. So I hope for anyone who's listening to this right now that go back through and take notes on what Chris is talking about and the principles that he's giving you for overcoming all those little things that imposter monster says that keeps us back. This is just incredible. I love it.
I appreciate that. I don't think anyone's ever said, go back and look at Chris's notes, but I appreciate that. I think that is definitely a first. Oh God.
It really is, because you're walking the walk and you're getting over that fear and you're giving people a strategy and even like a recipe, if you will, of how to, you know, be open to feedback, how to get better, how to stop just accumulating knowledge and actually take action.
Yeah. So. At some point, you got to stop reading the books and write your own book. You have to stop reading the movie. They're watching the movies and make your own movie. You have to pick up the camera yourself. That's what it is. So can we dive into some biases and stuff that's in my head? Because do you find a lot of female hypnotists? I feel like this is kind of like the airlines, all the pilots are men. And whenever I see a female pilot, I'm like, oh, they have the best pilot, like, period. Because if you're outnumbered that hard, you're gonna work your ass off to be better, just to be seen as good enough.
That's a great question. And it's so timely because a week from today, we're recording this on March 1st, and March 8th is International Women's Day. And I just did a little blip for Kaz Riley, who's putting together a thing for female hypnotists. And I actually am acquainted with a ton of female hypnotists, but they're, a lot of them are playing it safe. They're kind of in the background and they're afraid to step into their awesomeness. So I know that there are a lot of them out there, and people like Victoria Gallagher, Melissa Tears, Kelly Wood, there's some really awesome women doing incredible things. But I think you're right that it's, I wouldn't say it's a man's world, because I my brain just doesn't quite think like that. And I think that's part of the reason I'm willing to step up to the plate as a female. But I do think there's a big opportunity for women to shine in this field a little bit more, a lot more.
I agree. I think specifically, again, speaking as a male, not understanding, not being in your shoes, not enough female women that are stage hypnotists. I feel like women are like, yes, let me help you. Let me give you the tools that you need so you can be whatever you want to be. And I'm like, that's dope. I'd like to see you on stage. I have a theory, and again, realize all my biases. I think there are more male comedians for a couple of reasons, but one is same as just male magicians. Guys don't want to be fooled by a woman. They can be fooled by their peer, like, what's up, dude? Oh, that's pretty cool, crazy. But men don't want to be, quote unquote, beaten, outsmarted, outwitted by a woman. And there's a lot of toxicity to unpack there.
I love that you brought that up. So I'll share my perspective and you can Please. Tell me what you think. I think what you're saying, there's almost like this competitive undercurrent between the sexes. And I think as long as it feels like one, no matter the sex, one person is trying to dupe the other person or coerce the other person, there's going to be resistance. But when they step out on stage and say, hey, everybody, I see you, I acknowledge you, I want to make you look good, that it breaks that resistance. And I actually have a ton of men who follow me and come to my weekly hypnosis sessions and work with me one-on-one. And it's a little bit surprising. And I think part of it, I hope I can word this, I hope I can articulate this well. When I'm presenting myself and my tools, I never really think about myself as a woman or the person I'm like the sex of the person I'm trying to reach. Mm-hmm. I just want to help people. And I think that comes across in my yes. presentation. And yeah, I'm going to stop there because I'm not sure where I'm going next.
I think you said it. there's so much to unpack. I think men, boys have to be taught how to listen and to hear. I've only been married for a year, but the concept of this is what I said, but I meant this. When my wife says, what is your day like? When are your meetings? She wants, of course, me to ask, what is her day like? What are her meetings? And obstacles we might have just with like our childcare. So that's on the personal level. And then, I don't know, Ali Wong, who wrote a great book, Tiger Mom, she performed two of her specials while she was pregnant. She offered a theory. It's hard to be a female comedian because if you're going to be a comedian, you have to travel, you have to hit the road. And it's terrifying for women to be in a hotel when they're starting off, shady hotels. Mm-hmm. She's like talking about sleeping with the keys in her hand, and you don't want to be away. And then you want to see your family, but it's just a lot safer for a guy to be on the road by himself to sleep in a shitty hotel, excuse my language, to rent a car, to hop in an Uber Lyft with a stranger. Yes, stranger, I will hop in your car. You will not kidnap me. No, you're not going to. So
as a male, you would agree with Ali Wong on that thought process? Because I can definitely see her perspective.
Oh yeah, I've never ever thought about fitting in a trunk. Like, that's not a fear. Or being a performer and then taking my daughter for a second and I hold her and I make her stop crying, like, oh, you're such a good dad. Dude, I was on stage for like 3 hours and I held her for 10 seconds. I'm a great dad. Ooh. If a woman was on stage for 3 hours and held her kid for 10 seconds, you'd be like, oh, she's
right. So if you, I've only seen a couple stage shows in person, and one of them was actually with a woman. One of my friends brought me there for my birthday one year, and it was actually a female hypnotist. And I remember thinking, you don't see a lot of female hypnotists. So let's say a woman, not me, because I feel like I'm not as scared as I maybe should be about being a woman in this scary world. But let's say a woman came to you and she's feeling those things that you're describing and she has a fear, but this is like her passion and she really wants to do it. How would you advise her to move forward?
Good question. How have you lived your life so far without my advice? you've somehow found a way. So when you have to do scary things, do you bring a friend with you? Cool, bring a friend with you on the road. And that person can maybe sell your t-shirts or your audiobook or something, and that would pay for their fare. Get the Southwest credit card, and then someone flies with you for free. I mean, that's, my wife flies $5 wherever I fly with Southwest. Not a commercial, but it is dope. Like, we went round trip to LA and it was $110. Me, her, and baby girl.
What?
So, when you see the obstacle, you approach it, you realize, okay, this fence I can climb. Climb the fence. Just, what kind of fence is it? That's it. It's a fence. And that's, again, very easy, the dude speaking. But be smart.
I 100% agree with you though. And I think so often it goes back to the what ifs, like what if this scary thing happens? I think that we can tune our unconscious mind to show us answers based on the questions we ask. So maybe start just asking how can I move forward even though it's scary? How could I keep myself safe at a seedy hotel? Just start looking for ways, asking empowering questions and be amazed at the answers that come to you.
And maybe instead of doing a comedy club where people are gonna give you horrible food and maybe a free drink, say, I'm gonna do this corporate show, add a comma to your check, and that's it, and demand you stay at the Hilton.
Wow.
I don't know.
I like that solution.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, I can work really hard and be, I mean, I did a show, for $700 and no one got hypnotized. Now, this is when I was used to making $1,500 a show, and this was my earlier years. But, it was wintertime and I just wanted to do something. I was bored. And so I was on like Gig Salad, and that was the app or the website I used, and they said $700 for the corporate gig. I drove middle of nowhere, Wisconsin. They said, give us music. They're gonna eat steaks, and that's when you do your show. And I'm like, they're not going to appreciate me if they're trying to enjoy a steak. I don't even want to choke. Wait till they're done eating. And they're like, well, we only have this room for this time period. So I tried to do my little show. I was like, gentlemen, ladies, if you get hypnotized, someone hypnotized next to you, don't wake them up. Sure enough, like three women go out in the audience and the husbands are like, don't embarrass me in front of my boss. And I'm like, dude, that's my show. And so no one got hypnotized. And then I said, well, I'm sorry. And then I just played music with my head down. And people came up and was like, hey, I'm sorry we didn't get hypnotized, we're a tough audience. And I was like, why be a tough audience? Like, and I felt so bad and everyone was just so disappointed. I was like, I'm gonna give you half the money back. And she says, I think you should. And so then I had to drive home, middle of nowhere, Wisconsin. And so if I just waited and charged my normal $1,500, I wouldn't have felt like crap that day. But I have a story now, so.
And it's a story that I think can help so many people because I see the same thing. I hope you don't mind me drawing these parallels, but I see the exact same thing in hypnotherapists who want to charge a lower rate, and the kind of people that you attract to you at a lower rate are not the kind of people that are going to partner with you in changing their lives, because it's, you know, the more we charge, the more high caliber clients we attract.
It's true. And I can see the hiccup of, I don't want to pay or charge someone X amount of dollars to do the right thing. But my wife, the social worker, tells me to change your perspective. I'm not getting paid to help you. I'm getting paid to give you tools. Look at it that way. Mm-hmm. Or I'm being paid so you can extend your life. Like, I'm charging so many dollars per minute, but that's so you can have more time with your family. So I hope you appreciate that.
Yeah. And I think when we really acknowledge and accept the value that we are bringing, even if it's just to make someone smile and make someone laugh and make them feel amazing, when we understand the value of that, it helps us step into a willingness to ask for what I've heard called notes of appreciation in exchange for the value you bring.
Oh, notes of appreciation. I like that. That's cool. That's very cool. Yeah. So when are we going to see you on stage?
Well, I'm going to have to start tuning my reticular activating system for that, because honestly, my dream, when I think about my big business goal, I want to be like a Tony Robbins-ish kind of person who's touching millions of people, who's transforming lives. And that goes back to this idea of like female, male. It's never occurred to me that I can't be Tony Robbins. Like, to me, our genitalia has nothing to do with that.
It shouldn't. I mean, I love arguing. And when people are like, this is here and this is in this, I'm like, so God has a penis? You think the great being, how big is God's penis? Tell me that. Why does God have a penis? Does God have condoms? Why? Like, just this most silly thing possible. But Tony Robbins, you know, everyone says, oh, he has the whole package. He's 6 foot, whatever. He's like, you can't not be empowered by him. But was it Jane Elliott, the teacher who did the brown eyes, blue eyes thing? I saw her speak in college. And she's maybe 5 foot. But you got sucked in when she spoke. Like, it's not you being big. Nelson Mandela, same thing. He was a thin guy. You get sucked in. I mean, take whatever you can. Oprah Winfrey is dynamic and she's powerful, but part of it is she was an amazing interviewer. She is. And she'll listen to anyone. Like, she'll take a bigot on her stage and say, well, why do you think that? And she'll question. And, you know, it's kind of like boxing. You know, you need an opponent, because no one's going to watch you just shadow box. You need an opponent. And then when the thing's over, you can be friends and be in the interview, whatever. Mike Tyson, for example, he had a hypnotist. Tiger Woods had a hypnotist. All these people had a hypnotist. But Mike Tyson would say horrible things before the fight about the person. He's going to knock him out. He's going to destroy him. And then when the fight's over and he knocks him down, he'd help him up. And he'd kiss him on the cheek and say, thank you for the fight. So I want you to get on stage. And if anyone gets in your way, you knock them out, but then you don't humiliate them. You knock them on their butt and then you pick them up. Because if they want to come at you again, say, every time I knock you down, I will pick you up. Like, this is what I do. I'm used to this.
Okay, Chris. So if I were to rise to this challenge, which I can feel inside that I'm going to, I think this is my next step out of my comfort zone. What would be my first step in making this happen? How would you...
You need to just figure out where you want to perform, and I need you to record it and figure out the acoustics and advertising. That's kind of it.
Okay. So
you have this podcast, let people know, hey, thank you for being a loyal subscriber, listener. Check out the live show, tell your friend, share it with a friend. If you don't understand the sound tech part, I can help you. You need an XLR, which is a microphone cord. You need an adapter. You plug that into your laptop. You need a remote control or someone controlling your sound. speakers, microphone, and you've got a show. You need some chairs behind you. I don't know if you've ever seen a hypnosis show, but you need chairs. That's what you need. Okay. So also, I will give you this name, Nadine. She is the queen of hypnosis, and she's from Canada, and she's a lovely person. Check her out. She is fantastic. I haven't seen her show, and it's not because of any biases I have. I don't want to lift anything accidentally from her show. She's such a lovely person. I'm afraid to watch some people perform because if I take it even subconsciously, I'm like, damn. I should get over that, but yeah, she.
I get that. I feel the same way.
Yeah. So, Nadine, I'm going to send this to you. You two need to talk, please.
Awesome. I'm so excited, Chris. I never expected this turn to come from this conversation, but it is something that I've kind of what if'd before. What if I did do stage, and that would segue into my big picture of how I want to make an impact in the world. Will you tell me what is your big picture? You know, where do you want to be in 10 years, 20 years?
You know, I think everyone has like the financial goals, the personal goals. I want my wife always to like and love me. So that's a big goal. I'd like my daughter to be able to talk to me about anything. And I want her to be able to read by the time she's in kindergarten. So those are big goals. I want to pay off the house. And in terms of being a performer, it would be cool to have a Netflix special. No two ways about that. I want to travel. The goal is just do two new countries a year and employ my friends. Like my manager also stood at my wedding. She's fantastic. And I like being surrounded by people who I can trust, people who tell me good and bad news. And be genuine. Like, I don't mind staring at you on a screen at all, but I want people to get off their cell phones. I want people to get back to life and connect.
Do you have time for a couple more questions? There's one that keeps coming up for me. You talk a lot about friendships and relationships and the people that have boosted you up and are there for you. Will you just dive in a little bit about how you think about friends, how you cultivate friendships, how you choose friends?
Yeah, well, it's definitely been a journey. And I'll share this with you. My mom passed away. These things happen in life, but she was diagnosed with cancer. And I said, so what are you going to do? And she said, well, I'm going to go on a cruise because I deserve it. I'm taking her sister with me. So I was like, cool. I said a little prayer, and I wasn't too religious. And I was like, God, if you make my mom suffer, I will not forgive you. Probably not how you should talk to the creator, but that's what I did. And God's like, I see you. So she didn't suffer. She passed away within 6 months. But her prayer was that I wouldn't miss shows. And this is insane because I performed the day she died. I performed, then went to her wake. I spoke at her funeral and then performed that night. Like, I rescheduled two shows, period, over 6 months. And when you lose someone, you find out who your friends are or people who are in that right place at the right time. Nothing against them as people, but you find out who needs to be in your life at that point. So we're taking a journey because I hear a baby crying.
I hope people are watching this on the video and not just listening. I'm so excited for what's about to happen.
My sweet pea. Oh. I stole this from a hotel. Do not disturb. Oh. Sweetie, tell me, what happened? Was it a bad dream? Would you? You want to meet my friend? You want to meet my friend? Hi, sweet pea. Keep your composure. So this is our mountain.
I love it.
Oh, we're good, baby. Mm. Cheeks.
Hi, baby girl.
Say hi.
Hi.
We're back to normal. Oh my gosh. Hi. We're just talking about friendship. That lip. We're talking about friendship, sweetie pie. Those scary dreams over. I love you. So, Yeah.
I love it. Tell me her name once more.
This is Sage. She's pretty cool.
Sage. I'm so glad I got to see her.
Yeah.
Do you want me to let you go, Chris?
I think I want to just finish the point of when you're chasing money, like the biggest check I ever got was $70,000, which is legit. But that check was from selling my mom's house after she passed away. So yeah, tax-free, 70 grand. And the check was super, super small in my hands. I was like, we had this fantastic house we bought together. I lived with my grandma and my mom. And shortly after mom died, grandma died. I'm like, this check means nothing. So.
Go ahead.
Don't chase the money. Don't chase the money.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm so so grateful. Even if no one else hears this, which I'm so glad they will. This has been so awesome for me. And I'm so grateful to you taking the time to do this.
Yes. And I'll listen to you as you grow up. Yes.
Sage. Bye, Sage.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for hanging out with us. Keep doing the good work you're doing.
Thank you, Chris.
I think she is amazed by you. So keep being amazing.
Hi, baby. You as well. And you too, Sage. Keep being amazing.
Awesome. I'm going to see you on stage soon, okay?
Yep.
We will see you on stage. I misspoke. I'm sorry.
Bye, Chris.
Take care.
I'm so grateful you've listened all the way to the end. What is one tiny action step you'll take now based on an aha moment you got during the podcast? Maybe that life-changing action step is to come accept the gift I have for you at theimpostermonster.com. Head there right now to get your powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room. That lets you make important decisions and get crystal clear about your next step forward on this path of purpose in your one great and precious life.